Are you fed up of yeasty spreads that offer you no satisfaction? Sick of Australians boasting about Vegemite when really, due to their lack of cultural identification, they fuck all else to brag about? Is Bovril not giving you that warming feeling inside like the glowing boy on the Ready Break ad we all wanted to punch in the face? Then look no further than Marmite. Yes, spread easily across numerous positions. And now available also in sachet 2, you're guaranteed a hot cup of success.
I love it. I tried it once and I've never gone back. And it keeps me regular.
Oh, I tried it. Yes, it was absolutely delicious. Spread so easily across me toes.
I don't care what anyone says. Marmite's the best fucking spread that's ever been invented.
Marmite, a yeast too quick, even for Thrush.
Coming up on the podcast, as we lose percentages in the league, we turn our eye to the Wire stars of the future. It's a wet weekend for Warrington in the Challenge Cup, but did we play poorly? Were we outplayed? Or were we simply outcoached? But as the Wolves crash out of the cup, there's a server crashing over at Super League 2, and with the fixtures mounting up, we turn our attention to the Pie Eaters. Come on, it's not that bad, everyone. Cheer up. This is What Would Brian Bevan Say? Can I just say before we start, right, everyone's feeling really down, okay? So I don't want you two miserable bastards really knocking it down tonight. We've got to be upbeat right from the off. Oh, shit, we're recording. Hello, I'm Rob London, and with Wire having a disastrous cup exit, perhaps we can cheer ourselves up, as this weekend, Warrington are set to play the old enemy, the Pie Eaters. So talking of which, where are my two puff pastry podcasters? Firstly, he's a filling made of statistical suet, factual jelly, an Excel equation awful. Yes, he's Sam Cock and Bull Sankey.
Hello, good morning. It's sunny here today. The sun and dry weather. Why was it like this yesterday?
Straight away, Sam. You're positive. You're smiling. Yes.
You saw there, Rob.
Well, on Monday, I was just gazing out at the Pacific Ocean and I had a nasty fall. I went down on my face and I've cracked a rib. Metaphorically speaking, my thought was a little bit like Warrington's performance yesterday, and that's I wish I could do it all over again, to be honest, because a little bit sore. So don't make me laugh. No chance of either of you making me laugh, is there? And also, he's our podcasting short crust, although down there in Somerset, no doubt his pies come completely topless. Let's just hope he hasn't got his big, fat, sweaty tits out. It's Dennis Crustless Waywell.
All right.
How are you, Dennis?
All right.
Now, you've put a picture up there behind you on your fancy Mac computer of a pile of shite. Why are you doing that today?
Well, I just thought it sort of explained the mood this morning, really, didn't it? You know, it's a metaphorical sort of week of playing Salford.
Yeah, very good. Right, I'm just going to plug my iron lung in and then I'll be ready to go. So the first game was last Tuesday. It was Warrington Reserves or Warrington Academy or whatever you want to call them, against a Salford higgledy-piggledy side as well. The Wire team was Thulis, Akawala, Wrench, Brand, Roebuck, Dean, Patton, Havalate, Walker, Johnson, Longstaff, Robson, Davis, and the interchange bench was Kabula, Doro, Oakley, and Shelford. Now, the attendance was zero. There were 700 stewards and a very proud Dick Patton wearing his hometown captain's armband. So with youth being the gift of nature, but age being a work of art, here's the highlights to see whether one could educate the other.
Nil-nil, still waiting for the first points on the board. Ika Hahifo stopped short of the line again. Connor Jones will dictate the play. Gilmore, Atkin, Elliot Keir looking for actual balls, and he pushed into touch. Roebuck, Dean, Longstaff, look at the celebrations from the young Warrington stars. Nigel has won them for the Warrington Wolves. It's much changed Warrington side. Long pass out to Robert. Robert goes in! What a moment! The young Nathan Robert on his debut scores for Warrington. Here's Patton. Oh, lovely pass from Dec Patton. We knew he could make it, and who was there but Josh Hewlett up in support. No wonder he's smiling. There he is, Sammy Kugula. Played at Wigan, played on dual reg at Dewsbury. Now very much at home. And Warrington, what a sidestep that is! Fantastic try from Riley Dean! No wonder they smile! No wonder they celebrate! Ackers finds Gilmore. Crossfield kick, and it's taken by Kerr. Gets the ball out to Williams, and Williams will score. Much needed try for Warrington. It looks like for Salford rather, Scott Michalowski is going to send it upstairs. But for me, Rhys Williams has put Salford on the ball just before half time.
They're either going short or they're trying to.
Oh, on his own! And that is a try for Elliot Keir. They caught the young Warrington defence short. Dean and Patton, that's a good pass out there. Chance for Brand, tries to get the ball inside.
It should have gone out while that strolls in.
Yeah, Ellis Robson, it was on the inside. Keenan well Brand. Gone on his own as well, Keenan Brand.
Well, Keenan Brand, he takes a beautiful pass from Dec Patton, puts him into space. All he has to do is draw and pass. Look at him here, 2v1.
Yeah, that would have been a try for Wakawala, without a shadow of a doubt. Is through. Great opportunity here for Salford. Up supporting is Gilmore. Oh, Gilmore stretches over to score. Ackers, the architect. Gilmore on debut with the try. And Salford hits straight back. The ball goes back to Inu, but he's under pressure. They're going to have to run it. They do run it. Well, that was a possible interception, but a penalty. A penalty given. Is Inu going to break Warrington hearts? Right at the end, there's the penalty. We've got just a little over a minute to go. Salford in front for the very first time.
If you don't eat your meat, you can't have any pudding. How can you have any pudding if you don't eat your meat?
The first thing that really struck me straight away was that I had no identity to this side. They all sort of came on the screen. And I was kind of thinking, who are this lot?
Yeah, I suppose I had the advantage there over you because it was only a couple of players that I wasn't aware of. All but a handful I'd not seen actually play a full game. Mm. So it was interesting. And to see Sitalecki start on the wing, Roebuck I'd not seen before. And on the bench, Oakley and Shelford I'd not seen anything of. What I thought actually was they actually looked like a team. They all played in the right manner. They were all in the right position, and they all looked very organised to begin with.
Okay, well, I'll run through a little bit of a summary of the game, and then we can sort of all come up with our conclusion about what we thought of it. Warrington established an 18-point lead following tries created by a beautiful short pass from Patton to Thulis, a looped pass over the top from Dean to Roebuck. And Dean also doing the big right foot step to run back on the inside and score. We're 18-0 up, Dennis. We seem to be laughing.
Well, you say that, but I mean, before we get too much into this, I want to that you're entering this week. We're playing Salford twice. We've got one in the league and we've got one on the Challenge Cup. The purpose of what he's trying to do is to just maybe put all the eggs in one basket with this and go for the one at the Challenge Cup. So I do question whether we should have really played a full team of youngsters. And by the way, I was very much looking forward to it because obviously I don't think we've seen any of these. And as Sam said, I think, you know, for a team that hasn't really played together, they click quite well. And I think with Patton orchestrating you know, from his position. I think he actually directed them all around quite well and deservedly 18-0 up with the enthusiastic defence as well.
Unfortunately for Wye, there were a few defensive lapses in concentration. Conor Wrench not contesting a high crossfield kick, which led to Salford's first try, and also being caught short near his touch flag, letting Salford sneak in for their second. And a tired-looking Kabula and Doro leading to a Salford break and their third try, before Salford put a spanner in the Wye works, with Wrench being caught off offside and Inu converting the winning penalty. They weren't, you know, they weren't huge defensive lapses, but they were ones you wouldn't really expect to see, possibly.
They were. If you were watching the first team, rather than a group of lads with very little experience, you wouldn't be impressed by those lapses. But it seemed as though, from about 60 minutes, we couldn't get any go forward again, and we were under pressure. And the pressure started to tell, and they started to get tired without the possession. And that's when the errors started to creep in more and more. We were offside a lot. We got warned, didn't we, for continual offside as well.
Yeah, just a point on that, when you're bringing that up. I thought that, you know, clearly there was a whole heap of enthusiasm out there and hence why they were offside so many times. But I think on a couple of occasions, the referee confused offside with enthusiasm. I thought there was a couple of times he blew up when they just came out of the line very, very quickly.
There was one where Riley Dean was on the opposite side to him, behind the referee's back, and he clearly had his foot on the line and raced out to close down. A penalty was given against him. But we could see that one clearly on TV.
Yeah, there were promising moments for Wire in the second half, with Dean nearly repeating his try from the first half, only to lose the ball whilst attempting to touch down under pressure. Doro, too, in a similar fashion, dropping the ball over the try line, and a moment where Wire would have put the game to bed with Keenan Brown failing to pass to Akawala with the line at his mercy. That was the big killer, I thought, Sam, that one there. I know we'd let that try in before half-time, but if we'd scored that one,
I agree.
It was all over, wasn't it?
And Brand as well, he's still a relatively young lad, but of all the youngsters on that pitch, he played a full season with Widnes in the Championship last year. So for me, he should know what he's doing there. He should straight away be catching, passing to Akuola, who would just, he'd just walk him, wouldn't he? And the game's done. Yeah. The wind's taken completely out of the sails of their comeback. Just on the other two, interesting to hear your thoughts. Doro and Dean both dropping the ball just in the act, not necessarily in the act of scoring, but whilst trying to score. Do you think if both of them are 3 or 4 years older and therefore 3 or 4 years stronger, they keep hold of that ball and actually do score? Do you think they would? It was just the physique, the lack of sheer physique to do it?
Well, it's a bit, you know, it's almost saying that the ball got away from them is a little bit saying that you don't want to their age to get away from them as well. Because I do think sometimes the UK has an issue with looking at players who are 22, 23 and still calling them boys. And when you look at football you look at the kids playing on the continent in Spain and Germany, by that age, you're classed as an adult. And I went and actually looked through that Penrith Panthers back seven that played on the game on the weekend. Four of their back seven are 22 or under.
Wow. So, and they physically look like men, don't they?
They do. So I just hope that some of these kids, see, I'm doing it as well. I'm calling them kids. I hope some of these men don't leave it too late and all of a sudden they're 24 and we're then expecting them to come into the first team. Because I think now is the time really to, you know, it's difficult because we've not had any reserve grade footy to see how these guys play. But we might come on to the Wigan game and maybe suggest a few of them might be dropped into that Wigan game. Dennis, who was the sort of shining stars for you in that team?
Well, I think I've got Doro is still he made good yards. But yeah, I don't know. I think the thing I've got here is I'm just questioning, why are we putting out this team? I don't understand it. And I'll come on to it at the end of the Challenge Cup game, is that we've got two games, one to get the percentage to aim for the Super League, the other one for the Challenge Cup. And we're putting out this side where potentially you're not going to go into it looking to win. And I think they proved a lot of people wrong And I think collectively the young guys did a really good job. But should that have not been a bit more of a mix with experience? Because, you know, you just mentioned about, you know, would they have dropped the ball over the line, this, that and the other? If you've got a smattering of, you know, some first team players in there, then a bit more composure at certain times and having the right person in the right spot could have actually converted some of the opportunities they had during that game.
You know, one player that we did have in the team that sort of is on that cusp of the first team is Danny Walker. It was reported that Danny Walker made 71 tackles. Now, with Muggins having a cracked rib, I was able to lie in bed on Monday morning and do a tackle count for the first time, which actually wasn't that hard to do because you just fast forward through the bits when Warrington had the ball. I can tell you, he didn't make 71 tackles, lads. He made 63 tackles, and that's been pretty keen to him, you know, to say that he got all those in. First in the tackle, he was in the tackle first on 17 occasions. It was a clear sort of theme to the game that a lot of people run at Danny Walker. It's not the fact he's running up to them first. They spot him and go for him. He made a staggering 35 tackles coming in at the marker at second. And then at third, he made 11. But I would say eight of those, he did come in and sort of contribute to the tackle. But there were three tackles where he was just coming in as the player was pretty much on the ground. And he just put his hands on the back of Kabula or on the back of Robson. But I'm saying that Super League, or whoever's doing the tackle count, you just wonder how many more of those tackle counts are wrong when you actually just sit down and do it.
I'm just going to say that, you know, I'd like to know what the statistic is on a one-on-one tackle for Danny Walker, because like you say, people pick him out. But has he actually got the capability for one-on-one tackling? Because he tends to get squatted off a lot.
Well, what he does is they run at him and they push him back, but he's a tough bugger. And then by the time they've sort of, their momentum's come to a stop then, someone else has come in and Walker's back in on the tackle.
Yeah.
So no one runs over the top of him. But it's when you just watch the game back and you just watch him one play, you do get to see the sort of finer elements of the game. And you think, the poor lad, they really do pick on him. They really do run at him and, you know, try and knock him off his feet.
I think what he brings as much as anything else is the energy, isn't it? There's no doubt he's not the biggest of guys. I mean, when you compare him to Darrell Clark, who's 6'1", you know, he's not got the same physique, but he puts 100% in, doesn't he? You know, I know he's not Dennis's favourite, but you can't ask for more effort. And when he's your backup player, you know, it was a great effort that from him.
He reminds me a little bit of Isaac Luke, who used to play for South, the hooker there.
Yeah.
When you look at Isaac Luke when he was young. Yeah, when Isaac Luke was 20. Very similar in stature, not too different. Okay, I'll get a man of the match from you both. Who are you going for, Dennis?
Prepare yourselves. Bit controversial. I'm going for Dick Patton. And the reason is that, you know, he was the most creative one, as I've already mentioned. But when you look at the team and, you know, just the general play, he looked actually really strong, whether that be in defence or offence. Or when he got the ball, it looked like, oh, hello, something could happen, etc. And he definitely led from the front. There was one point where they were on the defensive line, on their own goal line, and he basically manhandled somebody and threw him to the side to get him into the defensive line. So I think actually, in that environment, and, you know, all right, he's probably better suited for the 18. But I just question whether, you know, we should really start looking at Patton as maybe a replacement bench hooker for Clark.
Me rib!
Because
me rib! Stop, Dennis, there, stop.
So there you go.
Well, do you know what? I'll go next just because I'm going to keep the continuity. And that is, I've also written down Dick Patton. I actually thought that was one of his best ever games I've seen him play for Warrington. And I'd almost go as far as to say I quite liked him seeing play in the Challenge Cup game, because I do think he draws a man to the line better than Austin or Widdop does. He's willing just to take on that line, that fractional more. I'm on medication. I'll stop there. I'll stop. What are you going for, Sam?
No, I can understand why you've both picked him out. I don't feel that there was one individual who shone.
Oh, he's doing it again, Dennis.
No, yeah. Hang on. Yeah, I'm not going for the team. Time. Personally, each time I've seen him play, I like the look of Josh Thewlis. He knows exactly what he's
Josh
about.
Who? Josh who?
Yeah, Thewlis. He knows exactly what he's about, and it is a great shame that maybe he's not a couple of inches taller, because he could make an outstanding fullback. I thought Dean showed bits. I thought Robson again was excellent, and although the Super League didn't have all his statistics on, he did show that Longstaff made 51 tackles. And I thought he really showed up well. But I can understand why you're saying for leading the team around the pitch.
I'm not agreeing on him particularly,
but I understand why you're saying that. I'll give you that.
The other one I've got is Roebuck, winger. Yeah, I definitely thought he reminded me, his size is quite, he's quite a big lad actually. I saw a picture of him next to Price, and I thought, you know what, he's got definite potential as a replacement for Gelling.
They've all got the same haircut. It's very difficult to tell them apart. I think a little bit more individuality amongst them would go down a treat.
Yeah.
Do you want them all colour-coded, maybe?
Good idea.
Steady tackle bag. Edit that.
All different dyes on the hair. One thing I wanted to pick up was, I know we're not meant to be being negative today.
Oh.
Look at him. He's got a red pen as well.
Oh, he has. Jesus. Look at him. He's leant forward. He's really going to go for this now, isn't he? I do apologise, everyone. Go on.
I was really, really disappointed with Latte.
Not much froth
Not much froth at all. Not much of nothing. He made tackles, but if I'd have had time or the inclination, I'd have gone and seen how many of those times he was third man in. But it's more so to me, his complete lack of energy when he's carrying the ball.
Yeah.
And I've actually looked at...
Two sugars.
I've actually looked at the props, the young lads, the younger props against Latu since we've come back. So we've got Latu has made 92 tackles. Yeah, 92 tackles, 7 missed tackles, so that's okay. As you said last week, defence should be a given. His average carry, 5.4 metres. Johnson, 84 tackles, just 4 missed. Average carry, 7.5 metres. Doro, 34 tackles, 4 missed. Average carry, 8.4 metres. Kabula, 46 tackles, 5 missed. Average carry, 8.3 metres. Latu's not going forward at all. Really, really disappointed. Really disappointed.
Yeah. He was supposed to be the answer to our prop, wasn't he? When we were all screaming for a prop, he was the filler.
Mm-hmm.
And really, not the best, was it? I'm not a massive fan of Kabula, I have to say. It's just something about that, his shape. Just something that, I don't know, he's all...
Oh,
I can't keep looking at him and thinking, what kind of shape is that man? Go away.
But for me, again, I think we've got a problem at prop. I think we've got a problem. No, not a problem. I think we've got a quandary. We've got Latu, who's contracted till November 21. We've got Sitalecki, who's contracted next year as well, and Price clearly doesn't rate him, although when he plays, you see glimpses of things he could do.
Doesn't want him.
So we've got supposedly Rob Butler coming in. He's age 22. We've got Lewis Johnson, age 22. Doro, who's 19, and Kabula, 21. Surely these 21, 22-year-olds are giving us better value than either Sitalecki or Latu. But unless someone's going to take them off our hands, we're going to have to carry on paying those two overseas players.
Mm. I thought Akawala had his best game. And that was because he was on the wing.
On the wing.
He covered a few balls as well. He seemed to get himself in a good position. I'd have loved to have seen him get away on that last kick across field had he not been 25 yards offside.
But that was a bit poor, wasn't it? Because he could have stayed onside, and he might not have scored, but he could have easily stayed onside and the kick was still on.
But lots of energy, played the 80 minutes as well. So who knows? Well, with Wire blooding so many youngsters, perhaps the best person to turn to for a balanced view in the game is young Daniel. But with him having recently contracted caveatitis from Sam, thankfully, rest and recuperated. Here's Daniel with his caveatless view of our emerging players.
So which of the young players really impressed me during Tuesday night's narrow defeat to Salford? I have to start with no other than Josh Thewis, who for me was man of the match by an absolute mile. We've seen Thewis play twice before, actually, against Catalans and St Helens last year, and he impressed in both games, particularly against Catalans at fullback, and that's where he played against Salford as well. He did a remarkable job. Everything you'd want from a fullback, he was so solid under the high ball, despite Salford putting plenty of pressure on him. He ran the lines well, scored a try by arriving into the line at the right time from the pattern pass. Absolutely outstanding performance from Thewis. I guess for him it's going to be difficult to see how he gets in the team with both Ashton and Rackford as fullback contenders ahead of him. But perhaps a year on loan, or maybe a year in the reserves next year, I certainly think he's one for the future because he looks a real, real talent. Very impressed with his performance. I also enjoyed the performance of Riley Dean in the halves. Again, a player we've seen before in that game against St Helens last year. He had a really good outing against Salford. Scored a try of his own, the third try, which was a lovely little sidestep, very Blake Austin-esque. It was really interesting to see some of the players play in the mould of some of the first team Warrington players, and Dean was very similar to Austin with that. He ran the lines well, good passing range, a couple of little mistakes in there, but a very good performance from Dean. I enjoyed what I saw of Aribe Doro from the bench as well. Two absolutely outstanding offloads, as well as plenty of metres made up. Good performance from Doro. And speaking of forwards, Lewis Johnson, a player that I really rate, he had a good outing as well. The two Ellis's, Longstaff and Robson. Robson, it looks like he's leaving. He's going to Ottawa next year in League One, which I think is a real shame. I'd hope that Warrington are trying to do something to change that decision, because in each game he's played, I think he's played three games this season now, and he's looked like a real player. Great handful. Very, very talented forward, I think. And Longstaff the same. He played in the second round, did a really good job, particularly in the first half. Very impressed with him. The Sky commentator has picked up on his performance a lot. Nathan Roebuck scored a try as well. Good game for him on the wing. Good debut. So those were some of the players that really impressed me. Absolutely outstanding performance from the youngsters. And there were quite a few more that I could have mentioned, but those were the ones that I felt particularly had good games.
Okay, let's have a look at the Super League league table. Had Wire beaten Salford, we'd have jumped to 76.92%. However, with the loss, we dropped to 69.23%, a swing of 7.69%. Saints are out on top on 75%. We've got Warrington and Wigan both on that 69%. Then we go down to Leeds Rhinos on 63.5%, Catalans on 60%, and then Huddersfield 53%. And then I think it might be mathematically possible still for Hull and Cast to get there, but it's looking very unlikely. Sam, how many more wins do we need, mate, to get in that top four?
I've said all along you need 12 wins. If you play 20 games, you need 12 wins. So we need to win three more matches to guarantee it. What we discussed a couple of weeks ago, though, depending on who you beat, you really do take points or percentages off other teams if you beat one of your rivals, don't you?
Yeah.
Catalans, I think, up and down. I think when you look at the best of the rest, unless you think Huddersfield Giants could maybe put a bit of a run on now under the stewardship of Luke Robinson.
Jesus. Okay, let's move on to the Wire Salford Challenge Cup semi-final. The Wire team was Ashton, Charnley, Gelling, King, Mamo, Ratchford, Widdop, Hill, Clark, Cooper, Curry, Hughes and Austin, named at 13. Interchange bench was Murdoch Masilla, Jason Clark, Philbin and Danny Walker. Attendance was zero and a shivering Steve Price in the stand who'd forgotten to wear his coat.
I'd just like to point out one thing before we get into the detail of the game, and I'm going to keep harping on about it, I know, but I did say and I did pick up about Ian Watson as being one of the best coaches, and I know we'll talk about it a bit deeper, but he did pick up after the first game that he was listening to the coaching staff of Warrington on how they actually approached beating, you know, Salford. And I'm sure there were some little gems of important information that he may have transpired into this game. And also, I also got a text out saying the weather conditions here would now mean that actually we should really consider who we should be putting on in that team based on the conditions of the day. It's a 21-man squad, so actually have a think about it. And I'm sure Ian Watson would be looking at the conditions and thinking, right, these are small nuances of the game. How am I going to exploit that? By dragging people into touch, by diving before a line. And we'll come back to that later.
Okay, so where 4 days previously the young Wire junior pupils couldn't quite finish off their schooling of Salford, could the senior Warrington Grammar School prefects give the Devils detention and book their graduate coach trip to London? Or would the Salford Comprehensives comprehensively joyride the Wire coach?
Clark's had a look both ways. He'll go to Ratchford. Ratchford takes it to the line. Looping pass. They've got the numbers on the short side. Brilliant try for Toby King. So Stephen Ratchford takes a look. One of those days where you will take your time. You will make sure that everything is in place preparations-wise. Lollahair kicks in behind. Oh, it's pitched up awkwardly there. Ashton's missed it!
Right.
And Salford might just have struck. Clark goes out the back to Austin. He's got runners. Austin will go himself! And Blake Austin just too powerful on the back of the pressure. Lusick will come to the centre, penalty, they're offside, we're Warrington. Last tackle here for Salford, in front of the post, Kevin Brown, a cross fielder, the chase is on for Minu! Oh, what a take from Christian Inu!
No, take the 2 points.
Spent his career previously exclusively in the NRL with the Melbourne Storm first. Good kick from Widdop. Salford, meanwhile, defending their own goal line. Doggedly, Ben Murdoch-Masilla! Ben Murdoch-Masilla might just have planted it down! Brown will kick back towards the posts. Arrowed in, oh, Greenwood! Just a couple of metres out here. Lusick goes himself! Joey Lusick!
Now, we're all a bit down this morning, lads, because just off air before we even came on, we said, we don't have anything to get through this, are we? It was an absolute clusterfuck of an ending to a game of rugby league. But what I wanted to do is sort of go through it in quarters. So we'll try and sort of summarise how the game went on, and then we'll all come up with our conclusion at the end. On the 9th minute, Gareth Widdop with a lovely kick through in goal, but the video referee deems Matty Ashton didn't quite ground the ball. 12th minute, Salford are down to 12 men as Tyrone McCarthy is sent to the sin bin after his tackle on Ratchford. And then on the 13th minute, with wanting to make that extra man pay by creating an overlap for Toby King to slide over, and Ratchford with a good kick, and we're 6-0 up. And then on the 19th minute, Ratchford bags over a penalty to make it 8-0. I thought that first 20 minutes was spot on, really. We seemed to have a game plan, Sam. We were just sticking it up our jumper. We were going forward. We were working on the assumption that it was going to be a wet afternoon, and we're just grinding to a good win.
100%. You couldn't have asked for much better in terms of the first 20 minutes. And actually, statistically, that was borne out by the BBC helpfully putting up 21 Jesus. Minutes that the Wolves had made 493 metres to Salford's 168. And Warrington only made 48 tackles to Salford's 108. You think the pattern of the game should be set, and we've obviously got a clarity of how we're going to play the game. But we seem to change away from that, literally on 21 minutes, when suddenly we start to throw the ball out wide. And I couldn't understand it.
Well, You said it, mate. 22nd minute, Ashton fails to deal with a kick and Watkins patiently pounces on a ball to score. Ino's conversion makes it 8-6 to Wire. And then on the 36th minute, Blake Austin, close to the Salford line, shows and goes, and he's in. Widdop slots over a conversion and we're 14-6 up. That looked to be the last score before half-time, but it wasn't, because on the 39th minute, on the stroke of half-time, Salford are awarded a penalty, which Ino converts, and we go in at the break 14-8. It got a little bit, you know, jittery, Dennis, going into the half-time break, but still, going in at half-time, did you think we were going to win the game?
You know, it's a completely different game, isn't it, in these conditions? This is the thing about it, is that, you know, we've got all our fancy players on in conditions that reminisce of some bloody typhoon. You know, I think the other thing about when you think about that as well is that you think about that first half, the leadership. We didn't mention about going for 2 points today. We usually question that when we had the penalty. Clearly, on a day like that, you want to take the 2 points. And if you notice the body language of the players at that point, I think Austin was going, oh, let's run again, let's run again. And Ratchford just walked up and said, no, we're going for 2 points. So that composure in this situation is absolutely key before you go on to the rest of the game, is that if you're trying to sort of play your normal game, throwing it about here, there and everywhere, it ain't going to work. And I think that's the thing about coming up to the half time here, is that, you know, it seemed as though, ooh, it's a bit jittery, this, that and the other. That's because it's really inconsistent the way that we were playing. I thought I could see this going tits up at this point already.
What would your half-time team talk have been, Sam, at this point? You've got them in the sheds. What would you have said to them?
Well, if they'd have even looked at my way, the the fuck are you would have been what the players thought. But the gist of it would have been, get back to what exactly we were doing in that first 20 minutes. We were making, Chris Hill was making more yards than I've seen him making. Mm-hmm. Yes, he was just driving it forward. We were playing a relatively simple game.
He likes wet conditions.
But the other thing for me that I felt made a difference to our attack, and I've come on to it really in the second half, was Ratchford went off relatively early, but didn't come back on till relatively late.
So tell me, where was Ratchford playing?
Well, Ratchford was playing loose forward, even though the team sheet named Austin at loose forward. Austin was playing out in the right and defending out in the right centre position.
Yeah, because it's harder to know when you've not got a scrum. You don't see who's going down at the back of the scrum, and you think, well,
whether you class it as loose forward or whether you just class it, Ratchford was more in the middle than Austin, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, well, let's move on to the second half. Now, I missed the start of the second half. Nothing to do with the fact that I was having a pee or anything like that. Just the Australian TV was still on an ad break. So I came in just as they were kicking across field. So you'll have to fill me in, lads. What happened from the kickoff?
We conceded a penalty when Joe Philbin stripped the ball on the second tackle and piggybacked him straight downfield.
Okay, well, Brown kicks across field and Inu reaches above Gelling, who seems to be fast asleep, to score. But he misses the conversion and Wire hold a two-point lead at 14-12. At 50th minute, Widdop slots over a penalty to extend Wire's advantage back to 4 points at 16-12. And then on the 62nd minute, Ben Murdoch-Masilla, back to his best, bashes his way over the line and the game looks almost to be won, with Widdop adding the extras to make it 22-12. So we'll stop there and say, pretty much from that point there, Dennis, we should have easily won. We just needed to run down the clock. We're 10 points up. We're on top. Game over.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not going to be too critical of the players. I will point out a few sort of coaching issues that you would need addressing. Firstly, you know, we've got Kevin Brown on the opposition. Not the fastest player by any means, but no one closing him down when it's coming to the kicks. So we had lots of time. So let's just put that down. That try that was kicked for Inu and he picked up. I noticed that Gelling, like a good ballerina, or if you like, helping Josh Charnley come down safely from his giant leap. Both of them missing the Inu catch where they scored. So probably wants to be looking at there. And then, yeah, I suppose really also on that try, there was about five players to three in favour of Salford around the ball when it was over there. Blake Austin looking on as our third player, watching the ballerina effect in the corner as Salford went over to score. So I think there were elements there that were signs that this isn't going to bode well for the rest of the game.
What did you think, mate? You think we had the game won on the 62nd minute?
I did. I thought that would put it to bed. I thought when Ben Murdoch Masilla goes over, I jumped up, shouted yes, and thinking that's it, that will put them to bed.
Yeah, because you two haven't noticed yet about the first game. We were 18-6 up at half time, and there was no panic from Salford. So you look at what they did, they get that half time talk, what were they doing then? They come out in the second half, no panic, just grind out and go on to win. In exactly the same situation here, where with a quarter of the game to go, it's like, oh yeah, we've got comfortably, we've got this one. Yet Salford managed to grind out a result.
Are we saying Watson's team talk, we'll get onto the coaching possibly at the end, but is Watson's team talk worth 6 points?
I'd like to get onto this now. No.
Ooh. No. No.
No. I did. That loss yesterday, we only got tackled, our first tackle inside our own 10 twice and only one goal line dropout, but we forced them to be first tackle within their 10 metres 4 times and forced four goal line dropouts. So we had the possession, the territory and the game plan to win. The players were simply not good enough to do it yesterday.
Really?
Ashton, their first try comes directly from Ashton dropping the ball in midfield and then should Ashton not picked. Dealing with a kick. Just a minute. Hang on. You two have just berated me for weeks saying he should always be first pick.
Before the match, the I texted try, you to say he should be dropped.
The second try came from Joe Philbin stripping the ball, piggybacking them downfield, and then, as you say, Charnley and Gelling getting all to cock and not even challenging for the kick. So that's, they've scored twice direct from two individual errors from us. And we're going to get on to another couple of individual errors again. That's not coaching. That's not being up to it on the day.
Coaching
as an individual player.
Coaching per se, but picking the team for the conditions and exploiting what's in front of you. Don't forget, we've come to the start of this week. We're playing Salford in the bottom half of the table with hardly a big playing team, you know, the number of players we've got against us.
Name your team. Name your different team.
I will do it at the name end. But the thing about it is you've come into
Excuse me, there's just the US presidential presidency here. Yeah. Can we please not interrupt each other, please? Over to you, Dennis. Thank you.
You're a clown. No, that's what he said, is it?
man.
But the point I'm saying is not so much, there is nuances, which I'll still come on to in Ian Watson's picked up on, but it's also picking the team for the conditions. We've got such a big squad. You've demonstrated it. You've got all these different players, and yet for this particular match, you're playing all the fancy players where it's like all about skills, this, that, and the other, when really you need a bit of grunt.
Mm. Okay, well, should we read some comments out then, boys, of sort of what's come in to say?
Yeah. Oh, are they relevant to this bit of
I think so. I mean, I think everyone's
bored. Or is it more relevant to the next mistake that we make?
You know, like there was...
getting into a winning lead.
You know, like there was 300 million people and that's the best two candidates they can come up with in the US. I'm going to read some of the listeners' comments out now because clearly you two also, you know, got to that age where you should move aside. Wazza says, no, I think Price got his priorities wrong. Tuesday field our strongest team today and then field the kids... In the Challenge Cup, he said, I want the league, no disrespect to Salford, but Wembley's going to be empty anyway. So he thought we played them the wrong way round, which is an interesting point. Fletcher Ender, he's written and said, we cannot play in wet weather football. That's why we don't win grand finals. It is an interesting point, that, isn't it? That we are now pretty much at the stage where the grand final would be coming around and we do tend to struggle a bit in October. So
nice to think we've got it out of our system, wouldn't it, if that was our grand final week, if you like.
Yeah, Richard Shaw, we seem to flip tactics after 15 minutes. Ashton takes that chance after Big Ben's try, and we could easily have won. Small margins, dropping a kick return and kicking out on the full didn't help. Big games in wet need sorting. Let's hope it's the real big one this year. We'll move on then to that last 20 minutes, and then we'll all sort of conclude where it all went wrong. 66th minute, Widdop makes a hash of the restart, putting Weir under pressure. Greenwood reacts best to the Kevin Brown kick across field. The successful conversion from Salford, and they're back in the game trailing 22-18. And then on the 72nd minute, Blake Austin, under no pressure whatsoever, on the fifth tackle, he's clearing and his kick goes straight into touch. From the resulting set of six, with Salford close to Wire's try line, Joey Lussick squeezes over under the sticks. Conversion cannot be missed by Inu, and Salford snatched the game with the final score of Warrington 22, Salford 26. What an absolute mess. Our two marquee signings, both in those last few minutes. First of all, I looked back at this and I looked at the Widdop one and I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. But if you look at it, he's got long enough to actually step back a few metres to get the ball at a better height. He just doesn't move.
Initially, he goes forward to the ball, almost a replica of what Mamo had done from the dropout just 10 minutes earlier, where he'd been, instead of coming onto the ball, which I think one of the commentators said, you stood there trying to take a glory pass, which, Dennis, you're right, in wet weather, you don't want to be trying to take something above your head. And this is where I will agree with what I think Dennis is saying. Salford don't, at the minute, is bred that into him that they don't know when the beat. So what you don't want to do is invite them straight back into the game. We've just put a 10-point lead on. What we should be doing, catch the ball, see out the six, big kick downfield, go on Salford, make 80 metres to score, lads. But no, we invite them straight onto our line.
Well, you know, going back to, and then this try is about, again, and you talk about the coaching bit, Kevin Brown not under any pressure again. I mean, that's a coaching bit. They've only got Kevin Brown as a kicker, really. I mean, they've got the other guy, can't spell it, say his name.
But he's, I mean, very up and down, isn't he, the other guy?
Yeah.
Lola here.
Put Kevin Brown under pressure. So that's two tries off Kevin Brown kicks, the fastest man on the Salford field. And then the other thing, when the kick went through, you look at Blake Austin. You slow that bit of footage down. He's got a 10-metre head start. He's looking at the ball, and then he runs in the wrong direction.
He just doesn't track the ball well. If you do watch he gets in the way. The post gets in the way, Dennis. He brought it up and tackled back.
Bloody
the post hadn't been there. But also Gelling, what was Gelling up to in that game? He just was fast asleep from start to finish. I don't think he could have quite got to that ball if you watch it back, but Gelling's the next one across. But he makes no effort. He just stands and watches it. He's not going to do it.
Yeah. Just on the back of that bit of Austin magic about not tracking the ball, I'm going to bring you to the kick on the fourth tackle where it goes out on the full.
I will give you an opinion in a moment. Just before we pass over it, I thought actually Salford were lucky that that try was given, because surely that was a knock-on. And we spoke about it a few weeks ago. If the referee sends that up as no try, would confirm the referee's on field. Because there's no way he knocked that from his right hand to regather in his left hand to then put down.
No.
So they were a bit lucky. But yes, to kick out, that's the type of kick I would do, because I'm crap at rugby, which is why I didn't become a professional rugby player. But when you're the marquee halfback, that's the moment when your big boot. It's not the moment for an error, is it? A basic error.
When is Blake Austin going to show up in a big game? This is how he was criticised in the NRL. He never shows up in the big games. He shows up on a Sunday afternoon, mid-table, you know, mid-season. But I'm still waiting to see Blake Austin show up in a really important game for Warrington.
Mm. How did you feel he played overall then?
He's taken on the line. There's no doubt about that. Jonathan Davies spoke about the one where there was the big gap, you know, and he threw that banana pass out to Charlie, which Charlie wouldn't have caught on a dry day, never mind a wet day. Looking back at that, he has got round Brown, but I actually watched it a few times today and McCarthy's there. There is another player there that may have got him. It would have been close.
But looking at, I don't think he should have gone for that gap. I think when you look at what he's done, and I think if he had his time again, when you look at what he's done consistently, is throw that big, huge dummy, but he keeps hold of the ball and steps back on his right foot, because every single Salford player was running across, and I think he'd have stepped back in. I thought he had a game of two halves. I thought he didn't do much wrong at all in the first half. He scored. He was threatening the line. And then in the second half, when we had all that pressure on their line, he just ran out of patience. And he threw one big booming pass to the right. He threw one big booming pass over to Mamo, and Mamo ended up going out in touch. He just loses. He just seemed to lose his patience when we were just camped on their line. They were going nowhere. And we invite them back into the game.
I want to go back onto that and then the final try, if we can. I just, again, slowed it down again, and I looked at Danny Walker this time. So you've got Danny Walker and Rashford under the post. Bloody post in the way again. Mm. Get rid of the fucking post. And, you know, when the play the ball is made by Salford, Danny Walker's and Rashford are both looking to the right. Danny Walker takes a step over, and by the time it's played, he's 2 metres away from Rashford. And that's where, is it Lussick at that point?
Lussick.
Play the ball. And what does Lussick do? He dives on a wet surface from 2 metres out, knowing that there's a good chance he's going to slide over and the tackle is going to be hard to make. I'm pretty sure that might have been part of the coaching strategy that I've already alluded to from Ian Watson. Need I say more?
Okay. We've had lots and lots of texts in and messages in about that. And a lot of people think Price got the team wrong.
Yeah,
seems to think we were a bit light in the team. I don't understand why you put Walker. I know Walker nearly scored right at the end, but I just thought we were missing a big bopper. Having said that, yeah, Deck Pattern I think would have been a better option than Walker, just something different. But having said that, I didn't think we were beaten in the forwards. I thought Chris Hill was outstanding. I thought he was by far our best forward. Cooper didn't let us down. Hughes was busy all day long. Curry did his little bit. Ben Murdoch Masilla was back to his best. He was really hard to bring down in the wet conditions. But I can't find the text now, but someone did point out that it was almost a case of Price was trying to fit everyone in the team. You know, he wanted to fit Ashton in the team. He wanted to fit Ratchford in the team. He wanted to put Mamo in the team. And there just wasn't enough places for everyone. And he needed to make a decision prior to kickoff to say, one of those guys needs to stand down. Forget who's the best fullback, whether it's Ashton or Rashford, but it just made everything a little bit lighter on the field. We had possibly one too many backs rather than forwards on the pitch.
That's my whole point about this is that, you know, I think, you know, he would have forgiven him for dropping Ashton before this game. I did point that out. And I was also going to say, forget Blake Austin. And as you point out, it's not by chance that the forwards and the bigger players shone in wet conditions, because that's what you're playing. I had on my bench, I had Davis, Robson, Doro and Patton. On my bench, maybe a couple of other bigger chaps
Ben Murdoch Masilla.
Yeah, I would have had him on from the start.
Or would he have started? Right, okay.
Yeah.
Did we think it was the right decision to take Ashton off? I just wonder how much that knocks the boys' confidence. We were going towards the end of the game and we've spoken about the X factor. If we did need someone out there who could go the length, it was Ashton. It didn't strike me as if he was the person that was creating all the errors.
I think, and this is only a guess, but I think he did it not because he was making individual errors, but because our defence was coming under more pressure. And in terms of organisation, Ratchford's going to organise them better.
Yeah. You know what's going to happen now, don't you? Yeah, this is the trouble, is that now Price is going to look at this and say, no, Ashton's coming a little bit too soon. Playing him in these conditions where his game isn't suited to that, these wet conditions and so on. You're going to end up now dropping Ashton for the future matches. He's not going to get his run in. You watch.
I thought that was his excuse. I thought when he took him off, he thought, okay, this is my excuse now. This is my chance to go back to Ratchford at fullback. And that worry, that dilemma all, you know, disappears, doesn't it? I'll have your man of the match. We'll start with you, Sam. Who are you giving as man of the match, mate?
Chris Hill.
Yeah. I'll say that as well. So we're all in agreement, Chris Hill.
Yeah.
So after you two have knocked him and said you wanted him out of the team for the last 6 weeks, you both come on board with me now, have you? So that's excellent. Good to know. Highlights mixed in there with the band London Grammar. Dennis, is there a grammatically incorrect capital that you believe should be banned?
Well, interesting. Miscapitalization is usually considered a grammatical error rather than a spelling error, but orthography is a method of how we write words, so incorrect capitalization is considered a spelling error. Couple of things, top five countries where the capitals are sort of capital of Switzerland. You got that? Anyone? Do you know where it is?
Burn.
Nice him out. Yeah, capital of Brazil.
Not
Sao Paulo.
Oh, very good, Sam. Excellent.
Brasilia. Wrong.
No.
Capital of Australia.
Come on, Sam.
Capital of Australia?
I know what it is. I'm letting him have a go.
Oh. Well, I know what it is, but I'm trying to remember what the correct after bit is. But it's Canberra, isn't it?
This is the easy bit. Come on,
what's
guys.
What's it called? Capital state or something like that? The ACT. It's Canberra. Around it, Rob. What's
ACT.
It called?
ACT.
Capital
ACT.
Of Canada.
Oh, go on.
Edmonton.
No.
Jesus. Sam?
Quebec.
He's useless. No. Sam?
Toronto.
No.
Edmonton. Edmonton.
No.
Good knowledge of Canadian cities.
Well, my partner is from Canada.
Did know that.
My partner was born in Canada, so I should. Oh, did I get that one right?
I'm going to get onto the main quiz in a minute. But anyway, I was just looking at capitals.
The main quiz?
You've got a quiz coming up. Just looking at capitals, anyway. Capital of the Maldives is very sexist. It's male. Capital of Albania is Tirana, but nobody can spell it. It's Tiran. Terrain or something. Do you know what the capital of the what capital is Prague? Do you know where Prague is?
Well, it's not Czech Republic.
He's onto it.
It's close to it. It'll be part of that, won't it? But it won't be that bit.
No, it was renamed in 2016. It wasn't in Czech Republic. It's now Czechia.
I'm having a point for that. Yeah. I'm having a point.
Okay. Found three Warrington players in some of these capitals. Slightly tenuous on the first one. The capital of Kiribati sounds like one of Rob London's former wives from Last of the Summer Wives.
She was a dirty bitch. Oh, me rip.
The capital of Kiribati is Tawara Atoll. Can anybody tell me any other capitals that have a wire player in them?
Oh,
it's a bit of a long shot, this one.
Tricky one.
I'll go on to it. We're not
Steve,
on the main quiz
Steve
yet.
Paris played on the wing for Wire in 1956. Very good under the high ball. Used to call him Mr. Eiffel.
Capital of Peru as a guess. Anyone?
Lima. Danny Lima.
Yes. Yeah, oh, Danny excellent. Lima. Yeah. And slightly, a little bit tenuous in the spelling. What about capital of Zimbabwe?
Podcast
team really fucking thick. It's Harare, as in Richard.
He was good. Yeah. He was a good little winger, that lad. Used to intercept a lot as well, didn't he? I liked him.
He was
him.
Fast.
Missed him.
Yeah. And I've got one for Steve Mascott, because I don't believe the Facebook and Twitter pages have been made for Grenada, which is actually St. George is the capital of Grenada. So maybe you can get a Facebook and Twitter page with his super IT skills, bringing down the rugby league this week, as I heard that the Our League app failed and all the fans couldn't watch the rugby league because of this shit fucking website. Anyway, here's your now capital... you're right, Rob. How's your rib?
No, I'm not. Not good.
Okay. Here's your capital quiz.
Are we still on this?
Yes. Medial capitals used in words. Now, here's your IT skills. I want you to tell me whether the medial capital in these words should be there or not. I.e., I'm going to give you an example. FaceTime. Where the capitals in that word? Should there be one or two in that word?
Don't they run with the whole sentence has been capitals with FaceTime? No?
No. It's FaceTime's got two capitals in there, face and time. Hmm. How about Macworld?
This is great. I love nothing more on a Sunday night to do
Come
Dennis's
on.
Quizzes. Macworld has got it's got MAC all in capitals and world. The first one.
Completely wrong. No. It's all lowercase. Only one capital at the start. You set this. You set this week. Oh, how many capitals? This, that, and the other. What a load of bollocks. MacBook. Anybody want to have a guess at that?
Two. MMB.
Yes, very good. Sam, you're right on this, aren't you? What about WordPress? Have you got anything on that?
All of them.
Just a W.
Every one of them capitals.
Just a W.
Yeah, and this is where the quiz now finally ends. So I'll draw it to an end.
Sorry, did I just get that right, Dennis? Because you seem to skip over that.
No, you didn't. No, I think you got it wrong. It's a shit quiz based on the fact that you're setting me these challenges every week to come up with some bullshit information, which I can't really do without messing it up.
Do you? The Sky commentary team and the BBC commentary team. What were we thinking this week, lads? Who took out the top clown prize in this week's commentary?
Have you got the one that was tweeted to us, Rob, to hand?
What was that? I've got to do everything. Daniel, I've got a bus rib.
Daniel Murphy, I think he said he pointed out that one of the commentary said Hastings or something had dropped the ball for Salford or something like that.
Oh yeah, yeah, and he doesn't play for Salford anymore. Yeah,
I've got two that made Mrs. Waywell laugh out of a skin on these. These are what do you call it? What's his name? Jiffy. Him.
Oh yeah, Jonathan Welsh Davis. Guy. Yeah.
Can you do his voice, Rob? That's the one. Yeah. He said, if you're going to make errors, make sure you make errors in the opposite 20. She laughed. She went, why would you want to make errors? Good point. Dickhead. And he said, another one, he said, he should.
You're on one today, aren't you? You're really on one today.
Yes. He said, he should have gone for territory, not kicking into the crowd. There wasn't a crowd there. I think he may have missed that completely. Yeah. So they were my pickups on the BBC commentary. That's what you pay your TV licence money for.
John Wilkin puts his full support behind an incompetent Toronto Super League bid, stating it has nothing whatsoever to do with him being owed by the club 6 months' pay. Deck Patton is made captain of the Warrington Wolves to celebrate the town's Care in the Community Week. And following Steve Broomhead being named in the new season of Strictly, the BBC urgently reinforces the dance floor in preparation for the Professor's Paso Doble.
So League Express are reporting Matt Davis has signed a 2-year deal with Warrington. Matt Davis is still only 24 years of age. It's not been confirmed by the club yet, Sam, but it does seem to be... You know, it does seem to be done and dusted. I noticed that even Matt Davis retweeted the League Express tweet. So yeah. I'm not sure what's going on there.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because the club seem to have deliberately not... We believe, or we've been told about people re-signing, and they've not been announced, have they? So it's quite interesting that whether it's a deliberate ploy given the economic circumstances, that they're just keeping the gunpowder dry.
Must have saw enough of him that they thought, oh, we'll give you a 2-year contract, but we'll not put you on the bench this week.
You've got some news on Ellis Robson, Sam. Understand that possibly he may not go to Ottawa, or he may come back from Ottawa to the Wire.
It's a coming back from Ottawa. I believe the club have been in discussions about, after his year's done at Ottawa, whether we have first refusal to sign him back. They've been that impressed with him.
I've got some more news on this. I'm going to go a step further than this. I've been told that in Robson's contract to Ottawa, there is a release clause that any Super League club comes in now or during his time at Ottawa, he is allowed to be released.
Ooh.
And I hear there's a little devil that may be after him. Super League and the RFL have apologised following our league app crashing during the streaming of games. Season ticket holders issued codes were unable to access the games between Leeds and Catalans and Huddersfield and Hull KR. Very amusing if you go onto Twitter and see what they actually did right to the RFL when the thing crashed. A joint statement read, the problems were a source of huge disappointment and frustration for us. As for those supporters affected, Super League said, we have investigated the issues with our media platform partners Stream AMG and isolated it to interference from another platform.
Oh, wow. Do we know the source?
They were hacked.
Oh, dearie me. You just can't. Now, Dennis, you're in engineering. Surely before you put something on the shop floor, you know, you're manufacturing something, you give it a few test runs before you start whacking it out.
Yeah, that's usually the idea of it, yeah. But I suppose, like, you know, from unsuspected media streams elsewhere that you might not be aware of, you don't really know what they're up to either, do you? So they're untested as well.
Oh, me rib.
I'd like to just pick up something that we touched on last week there, though. The sooner Warrington get their Wire TV up and running, the better. Mm-hmm. We talked about briefly about season tickets for next year. Would I pay now £350 or £380, whatever it is, to buy my season ticket? No. Would I possibly pay some sort of bond to save my seat
into bondage,
right? and know that I've got access to Warrington's own streaming service to watch the games? Yes, I probably would.
Castleford Tigers head coach Daryl Powell has received a compliance letter from the RFL following his comments about match officials. Powell described the referees as terribly poor. I received a notice from the RFL about these comments, Powell revealed. I don't think I was bad towards any particular referee. I just spoke about them improving. Powell continued, everybody should want to improve and you cannot hide behind anything. I cannot hide as a coach. I want to improve every week. We are all looking to better the game of rugby league. You still should be judged on what you do every week. And not everybody is, unfortunately. We've spoken about this, Dennis, more than once. Probably move on to Sam, first of all. You've written to the RFL. We've been trying to get a match official on for a few weeks. And they've just sort of, what, the hunger's out to dry? What's going on here?
Well, the first time I sent an email in, I got a very nice response saying, Steve Ganson doesn't do this, but if you wait till after the weekend, I'll come back to you and we'll sort something out. So after the weekend didn't happen, so I emailed him again and got no response. So on Thursday, I emailed him again and I'm still waiting for a response. So if they don't want to come on, that's fine. Just tell us. But this guy was head of media and communication.
So that's not a way to act, is it? Just to ignore your general public, the people who are out there trying to promote the game.
Maybe he's actually thought, I'll just see who these lads are, and he's picked up your sketch with Ben Thaler and thought, right, well, they can stuff that. Ben Thaler and Robert Hicks having a Christmas turkey or whatever it was.
Hey, I tell you what, did you see the mindset of Hicks when he makes a refereeing decision from the big screen in the Warrington Salford game? He was,
I think it's all right. I'm not sure. They run it through again, and I don't.
I mean, when you see that and you see how indecisive he is, you think, Christ, some of the decisions he must make on the field. It's just
to the Ben Thaler one in the match before. That went on for about 5 minutes.
I was watching, you know, I'm sitting in bed. I've watched again this week. I've watched a little bit of NRL, and they've got these young guys in this bunker who are apparently being criticised at the moment. They may not get the tender for next season. They may actually give it to someone else. But, you know, a decision goes up to it, and it's back down with the referee in a matter of seconds.
Yeah.
And there we are.
They're already halfway through reviewing it. I did wonder the way that the video refs speak on BBC, I do wonder whether they're actually, it's simply because on Sky they must have a working relationship directly with Sky, but they do it so little times with the BBC. They're saying, no, I'd like to go back 5 frames. It's almost like they're talking to the BBC programme director, isn't it?
And maybe how many times?
That's part of the reason.
How many have to look at it, though? It's just constant. It's, you know, okay, we've seen it. We've all worked out what it is. We don't need to see it another 12 times.
There was an offside in the Wigan game. This might be the one Dennis is referring to, where Gale was about 5 metres in front, took the ball and scored, try given on the pitch. We looked at it once on the replay. You could see he was clearly offside. And Thaler goes, no, can you just roll it back? Can you roll it back? Right, I want to see it when it's on his foot. Yes, he's in front. Now roll it through. Yes, he does take the ball. You've seen all that twice already. You don't need to see it a third time.
It wasn't even that one, Sam. It was on 39 minutes where there was a touchdown or something, and that went on for 5 minutes. So I didn't even see that other one. So it must have been about 15, 20 minutes of video of ref action. We could put that together and release it.
The only thing I do want to do, though, I do want to stand up for the refs in one respect.
Even after they've ignored you for a few weeks?
Yeah, it's okay for Powell to say refs need to improve, and it's okay for us to slag them off, but if they make two or three errors in the game, fine. But a player might drop the ball 4 times, so you've got to look at that as well. You've got to look at your own team making errors. Everyone makes errors. It's just
This is well teed up for tackle bags. This perfect.
But the thing is, what Powell is saying is, he said people need to improve, and there doesn't seem to be any improvement.
Don't disagree.
We never seem to no one speaks to them. You know, they just seem to be just floating along in the background. Never improves. Last time out, he propped up the podcast by looking at Wire's three best props. So back again, very own podcasting Pythagoras with his mathematical formula, which states that the square of the hypotenuse prop scrum is equal to the sum of the other two props tackles that never play or are on paternity leave. It's over to...
Statistics, caveats, bollocks. Listen up, you norms, it's time for Sam to talk shite. For 5 minutes. It's Sam Sankey's shitistics. No. Dick's data. No. Anal cyst. No. Twat stats. No. Statistics. Yes. That's it. It's time for Sam Sankey's statistics.
Okay, right. I've already done a few of my statistics for you today. I just wanted to...
Oh, good. Let's move on.
There's a caveat.
I just wanted to pick up a little bit on the props from last week. We had a listener text earlier in the week saying, could we find out some information on Rob Butler? I can't remember who the guy was.
Aylesbury MP, Conservative.
No, that's not the Rob Butler that we've signed. The Rob Butler we signed, aged 22, originally played for Medway Dragons in Kent and London Scholars before playing a full season for London Broncos. And I looked at his last 10 games that were all off the bench. And during those games, he made an average of 24 tackles per week, 3 missed tackles per week. And his average carries were 6.8 metres. He only made 3 errors in those 10 games, but he made 0 offloads. So perhaps he's a very conservative standardized player.
Statistical measure now of 10 games. The deck pattern 10 games is now going to be a unified measure.
I didn't want to go through all 26 individually, so I just decided I'd look at his last 10. Okay. So next year with him here, and we've obviously got, as I've said before, Sitalecki, Latu, unless we can move them on. Jesus. We've got Lewis Johnson at 22, Doro at 19, Kabula. Oh. I don't know whether he's signed for next year.
We don't like the shape of Kabula.
I know you don't.
You're not exactly encouraging season ticket holders, are you?
No. So moving on. This week, we've got Wigan. Okay, so I thought the old enemy, the team we all love to hate. So I thought I'd look at what we've done in the last five full seasons against them. In that time, we've played them 22 times. Ooh. We've won just 8. We've lost 13 times, including 2 grand finals, and drawn once. When we had them at Newcastle.
This year we lost.
When
still
Dennis
going
Murray
on about losses.
Yeah, with Chris Hill. So where to stop Wigan? Where to stop
my favourite player, Chris Hill.
Yeah,
Wigan better shape than Kabula.
Same height, according to the Warrington website.
Is he a plumber as well?
Excellent statistic. Yeah.
I don't know. Wigan revolve all around 3 players: Jackson Hastings, Bevan French, and Liam Farrell. So in Super League to date, Jackson Hastings has carried the ball more times than any other player. He's carried the ball 234 times. The second most to carry the ball in Super League this year is Liam Farrell. So they're the top two. They're the top two. There you go. And Farrell's also made more metres than any other player. And Bevan French is a top try scorer. So if we stop those 3 players... might be easier said than done, but the less time that Jackson Hastings and Bevan French can touch the ball in our 20-metre zone, the better, because that's where all Wigan's attack comes from. To compare that, Warrington's top tries are Austin and Lynham, 7 each, compared to Bevan French's 10, and our top carriers are Charnley and Cooper, and Charnley's made our most metres. So it's a forward for Wigan, it's a back for us. And then I've
it's
gone
almost
on to
as if you're trying to get, you know, tell Price how to coach the side, really, aren't you?
Almost.
You
know, almost.
Close these guys down. These are the players you should be looking at for meters. Good, good.
I've also done a bit of historic investigation here on Wigan.
This is Time Team, so, yeah?
Yeah, Time Team. Wigan were formed in 1872, obviously. And in 1872, Pope Pius IX was in charge at the Vatican.
Jesus.
And since then, there's been 12 popes. Now, famously, Wigan Rugby went to Rome to see the Pope, and apparently he told them to fuck off. But I've actually looked at this, and in the first half of the 20th century, all the popes spoke Latin. But since the Second World War, most of them have spoken Italian. So they wouldn't have said, who the fuck are Wigan? They would have said either... Qui infanto san inferno, Wigan, or in Italian, che di valio son I, Wigan. So, and I think the most likely time was the Archbishop of Westminster is the most senior Catholic in Britain, and William Godfrey was from Lancashire and visited Rome in 1956. So it's most likely, therefore, that it was Pope Pius XII who told him to fuck off back home. That's the stats for this week.
And if you'd like that in proper Italian, rather than the south of the river Warringtonian Italian, please tune in next week for the translation.
Have you had your medication today, Sam? Did you take it?
Yeah, the Challenge Cup's dead to me. It's Wigan week.
That's the way things are.
And time now for the Twitter vote. Is that it? Is that all I have to say? That one line? I have to say more in lockdown letters. This is so insulting.
Well, obviously, we don't know the results of the election yet, but what we do know is that about 4 in 10 of us probably didn't even bother to vote. Pollsters have a name for people like this. They call them morons.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Why did Paxman get the big lie? This is utter horseshit.
Okay, it's on to the Twitter vote. It was mainly around the young guys that turned out last Tuesday for The Wire. We asked which Warrington back impressed you the most in last night's impressive display. The four options were Conor Wrench, Riley Dean, Josh Thulis and Keenan Brand. Well, neither of the centres got much of the vote. Conor Wrench only got 2.1% and Keenan Brand only got 1.6%. The clear winner was Josh Thulis on 64.9% with Riley Dean in second at 31.4%. So kind of is where it is at the moment, isn't it? Are those two any older than the other two? I mean, he's Brand's getting on a bit now, isn't he? He's not that young. It's Conor Wrench that's the young one, I think, out of the four there. That's a few years on him.
It is.
The second one, in yesterday's evening game, which talented young Warrington forward excited you the most? The four were Ellis Longstaff, Ellis Robson, Irib Doro and Lewis Johnson. The winner was Irib Doro on 41.1%. I'd like to see him moved into the first team a bit more. I think, you know, we've given Latu a go. He's clearly not turning out to be the coffee we wanted him to be. Kabula, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but he's a funny shape. So I'm suggesting that Doro's given his chance, Dennis, don't you think? He's aggressive. Yeah. He's got a good haircut. I think everything about him is good to go. So
yeah, fresh as he come. I'd get him in there right away.
Now, in recent times, Dennis has done what any wise businessman will do by outsourcing his work and simply reaping the rewards. But with his ghostwriter Gareth Monkey suffering from writer's block, what primate idea will our very own hairy baboon come up with this week? As it's over to...
Tacklebags.
You're joking. Not another one? Oh, for God's sake, I can't stand this.
Well, you know, it's back to me to carry this section of the show. Anyway, we always cover a variety of different topics, don't we, here in Tackle Bags? We're looking at how we're going to get fans back into the stands. Well, we came up with the bubble suit that used in football, the Keep Neutral Orbital Bubble Suit, which incorporated by the design the fact they are 2 meters radius absorbing bubble suit that would allow fans to adequately and socially distance themselves on the terraces. So these suits would be hired at the ground as part of the ticket price. They would allow supporters to enjoy all the usual activities in the safety of their own bubble suits. The suits incorporate a one-way valve where the void can be in the suit, could be loaded with 2 pints of beer, straw attached, and conveniently it attaches to a top-up stand of containing beer in the stand. So much fitting in with the future of our sport under these conditions, the bubble suit. Various other functionality we discussed were the fact that you could consume pies and chips, and even with a integrated loo with a modesty sump for the ones that have got lots of wee that they can't get rid of.
I think anyway, my rib has actually healed during the whole of that paragraph.
Sorry. Well, further developments will be discussed with, as I mentioned, Professor Broomhead with the addition of the 10-kilo sump system. Anyway, now, quite interestingly, 68% agreed. I think it was just everybody's so keen to get back to the stadium. This one off Rosie Malahide. I'm very much in favour of getting back to the ground. I'm a size 26, so as a result, I'm already socially distanced and probably wouldn't need a suit. Would I get a discount? Well, okay, that's possibly something to consider. No, 30%. This is off Epileptic Fridge Magnet. A clear health and safety risk. If some fucker falls over and ends up skittling 20 people, it would be like a multiple golden shower with all that drink and piss sloshing everywhere. Something to consider as well, I suppose. And 2% Fitzpatrick's tan jacket just said fuck bubble.
Oh, yeah,
I don't know what that means. Yeah. Anyway, this week we've seen criticism from the referees, and this was off Daryl Powell, which we've already alluded to, resulting in what only can be described as a written warning from Ganson. And our very own Sam Sankey writing to Ganson on numerous occasions to question and clarify the rules around the play the ball, which has been met with complete silence. So let's have a look at how we can improve the referees with some technological applications. Right, we're going to start with the fitness of the referees. I think we alluded that, the, you know, we've got about Ben Thaler. He's a lovely fella, bit rotund, but, you know, we'll have a look at that. And the ability to keep up with the play is one of the consistent things we need to think about with referees. So we've designed a new refereeing utility system called the Referee Integrated Motorized Media Segway. Here, the referees will ride on a Segway, which contains all the necessary equipment to officiate the game. The Segway can travel up to 18.6 miles per hour, which is a full 18 miles per hour faster than Ben Thaler. Fitted with a screen, it will be linked to the TV camera so the referee can instantly review any decision from where there's a breaking play and eliminate the video ref, saving the RFL money and drastically reducing the time taken for a video ref decision. The Segway will also be fitted with a horn, which will be used for the timekeeping, six again notifications, a loudspeaker that allows referees to stop shouting on the field, and further enhancements such as external display, which would show the tackle count and penalty decisions for fans and players alike, a laser line projector that would be shot across the line for the defensive line so that they know where to stand behind to keep them onside, and a whole array of cameras to provide a variety of camera options linked to an onboard computer utilizing a special momentum software package to rule on forward passes. Clearly, this is a revolutionary technological step which requires investment. So I'll be writing to sponsors like Betfred and also selling the idea to Papa John's, who could sponsor an insulated onboard pizza box that could be used to deliver pizzas at the end of the game. Mm. What do you think, guys?
Predictions.
We can predict the future or resist the inevitable urge to try.
Good afternoon to you. Earlier on today, apparently a woman rang the BBC and said she heard that there's a hurricane on the way. Well, if you're watching, don't worry, there isn't.
Warrington, but can I do it with a caveat, please?
The game started to roll thick and fast for the Y now, with the next opponents more thick than fast. Yes, it's that salary cap scum-dodging team of the 80s and 90s, and now nothing more than pathetic lodgers at someone else's ground. Yes, which they scurry to leave when they're losing with 20 minutes to go. It's Wigan. Dennis, Sam, no Wigan walk based on current COVID restrictions, but will The Wire have the inbred pie-eating supporters reaching for their Radio Rentals remote controls to switch the game off early?
Yeah, did he stand up off the chairs? Where, did he stand up from the settee where they are and walk into a different room? Is that what they do on 70 minutes or something?
Something like that, something like that. Who wants to go first then? What are we thinking, boys? I mean, I didn't see the Leeds-Wigan game, but my dad said that Leeds absolutely crucified Wigan. So are they sort of a wounded animal, or what, where are they going to be at, do you think? Are they just shit, or are we going to beat them?
I think we're both wounded animals in that sense, aren't we? Wigan were nowhere in that game for 70 minutes. Only scored a couple of tries in the last 10 when Leeds presumably put their cue on the rack. I've looked at this statistically this week to see whether this will work. And yeah. I've looked at the average points week score compared to what we concede and the average points Wigan score compared to what we concede. And that comes out to Warrington winning by 4 points. Oh. So I'm going for a Warrington win by, it was about 3.8 it was. So Warrington win by 4 points, I'm going with.
Positive, okay. That, wasn't it? By 0.2. Yeah. Mm.
That's good. We're currently on 69.23%. If we win, we go to 71.42%, which is plus 2.19%. If we lose, we drop to 64.28%, with minus 4.95%. A swing of 7.14 compared to a swing last week of 7.69. Thus, the swingometer is a reduction of 0.55%. Mm. So, how about that? Moving forward.
So if we were to lose, we'd be back up at 66% next week because, well, 66.6 recurring when we play Leeds. So
come on.
We came up with your percentages.
Yeah. You come up with your percentages. Now, who do you think will win?
Well, I think, and going back now to the two games that we've watched last week, that...
Good.
Okay. In the NRL, if you don't turn up 1 week, you get dropped. And yes. This is why Blake Austin found himself on the bench at Canberra, because he didn't show up every week. This is why Anthony Gelling, when he was playing over in Auckland, also got dropped, because he didn't show up every week. So I'm saying that a couple of those players need to be dropped to give the guys in that team that played last Tuesday some enthusiasm to say, if you play well, there's a chance to play in the first team, because they're not playing on Vicky Park every week. So I think two need to be dropped. So I'm going to move to fullback Josh Thulis. I think he gets a chance to play at fullback. I'm going to move Ratchford into number six. I'm going to drop Blake Austin. And then I've got a little bit of a, I think Mamo possibly we still play and put him in the centre. And we put Ashton on the wing and give him a go there. So I'm just swapping things around a little bit. And I'd like to see Doro come into the side as well. On the bench somewhere. Yeah. So I'd like to see them just make about three changes to put the boys on notice that things need to be changed. And I think we'll be... It's also going to be raining again this week. It's going to rain on Friday.
That's the point I was going to get to. I agree with you totally there, Rob, is that I'm not going to name the players because that would be unfair to do so, I think, because, you know, I shouldn't be picking on individuals like you've just done. But what I would point out is the fact that we should really be just playing to the conditions, and we should be doing exactly as you suggest, which is actually giving those youngsters now an opportunity and having a philosophy that, as you say, you don't play well, you're out, and you know, you get him in. But we have to keep Mamo in because we've done about three or four sound bites.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
That goes with the given.
Yeah. So I'm going to go for Warrington just. Dennis?
Yeah, we play at Headingley, I think, this week.
Yeah. Warrington win. We're going to shit.
Okay, that's the podcast over and out. You know what to do, Dick Splashes. Tweet to @WhatBevan, email to whatbevan@gmail.com, or if you're considering putting your Christmas lights up in your shitty little porch this October to illuminate your St. George's flag, there's always Facebook. So from a man baked in podcasting aplomb, who for his gourmet pies heads straight to Marks and Spencer's Food Hall, it's a bespoke creamy chicken leek and smoked bacon pie from Sam.
Waitrose, actually. But all the best.
I'm from an old lad who thinks a posh night out of fine dining is driving to Knutsford Motorway Services for a meat and potato pasty. It's a Greg's goodbye from Dennis.
Good seeing you.
I'm Rob London, and having been born south of the river, I think I'll skip the pies, if you don't mind, and order a tofu quiche with quinoa salad. You've been listening to What Would Brian Bevan Say?
Still does nothing for your body, though, does it?
Fucking rib is absolutely killing.
My vision doubles. My body will ache. It's nice to meet you.